Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Jim Hansen sitting in for Frank. Now, it has been quite entertaining since President Trump began the counterattack against the assault on his campaign, transition, and now administration. It is unprecedented and dangerous, and those responsible need to be named, shamed, and in many cases, cuffed and stuffed. Heck, we will hopefully see many of them being frog-marched in shackles out of their burrows deep in far too many government agencies. It was disgraceful to see the volume and sensitivity of the information being leaked during the campaign, all of it aimed at discrediting candidate Donald Trump and stopping the groundswell of support forming around him. There was manufactured controversy after faux outrage after fake news report. All the while, the actual crimes and corruption of the Clinton crime cartel were ignored or even worse, obfuscated and covered up. Now, I am no fan of adding dash gate to every scandal that winds its way around the Beltway here in Sodom on the Potomac. But this one, I think, warrants becoming Obamagate. We may never find his actual fingerprints on an order to spy on Trump and his people, but he did it in every single meaningful way. No one with an above room temperature IQ believes that during a presidential campaign, warrants to spy on the Republican Party candidate and anyone he knew with a Russian stamp on their passports went out the door, and Barack Obama did not know about it and did not approve it. Ha! Of course he did. He did it, and it was part of their support for Hillary. And they went way, way over the line. The mistake they made was in assuming Hillary would win, and no one would be digging into their dirty tricks and leaking. Because it's a crime to leak classified information. And now that President Trump is in charge and draining the swamp, it will be fun to watch the political partisans who thought they were safe in their government hidey holes where they couldn't get fired, being pushed out into the light and shown the full force and power of the U.S. justice system. Mr. Attorney General, release the Kraken. We simply cannot tolerate the use of our most sensitive intelligence for attacks on political opponents. Now, I do have to admit, it's been kind of a Schadenfreude fest to watch the media trying to pretend now that there are no wiretaps. I mean, they're tap dancing so hard they woke Mr. Bojangles from the grave. They spent the best part of last year, though, rejoicing and propagating story after story about how Trump and his crew were all colluding with and basically owned by Vlad the Impaler Putin and would sell out the United States to Russia the second they came to power if they hadn't already. The problem for them now is the media kept citing all these leaks from senior intelligence and administration officials who had access to this information. And this information came from, wait for it, wiretap surveillance. Whoa! Which proved that all the Trump posses were swilling vodka and shoveling plates of caviar down their cake holes while selling us out to those nasty Ruskies. Well, apparently these guys only became evil now that Hillary and Obama aren't using mislabeled reset buttons to show us how we were all going to be friends with them. But never mind, the backpedaling is in full effect, and all those pesky New York Times headlines reading evil Trumpkins are bad, and we have wiretap info to prove it, all of a sudden need to disappear. And, oh, by the way, they didn't mean the Obama team was actually spying on Trump's people. No, no, no. They were spying on this guy who was standing next to this guy who knew Trump. And, well, boy, we sure thought we were going to find a lot more dirt from those wiretaps that didn't happen. But since we didn't even find a muddy footprint, well, then there is nothing to see here. Please move along. You know, it would be comical if we weren't talking about a combined effort by the sitting U.S. president and his crews of internet plumbers in the intel community, the Democrats and Hillary, and the ever-compliant lapdog media serving in their beloved role as palace scribes to the Lightbringer. Now, this is a giant disgrace. It's an outrage, and heads must roll. These people were doing all they could to change the course of a U.S. election, and that cannot stand. I mean, thankfully they failed, but that is all the more reason to squash the guilty like bugs. Pour encourager l'autre, as the French Foreign Legion used to say, to encourage the others. Examples must be made. Now, all the time they were howling that Russia hacked the election, but like so much of the rest of the baseless accusations the left makes, all along it was them doing the dirty deeds. You see, the left suffers from a pathological case of psychological projection. They have so much hatred and badness running around in their heads that they just assume we on the right must be the same. And they're perfectly willing to throw rules, the Constitution, free speech, and fairness out the window because they have bad feels about Trump. Well, guess what? That's not how it works. And instead of squalling about non-existent attacks on human rights and women being oppressed and minorities suffering an incredible wave of hate, you need to take a look in the mirror and realize it's you. You are the problem. Liberals and progressives, you are committing the crimes you're accusing the right of. There have been so many exposures of fake hate crimes perpetrated by lefty activists for sympathy, and at this point, the proper spelling of Islamophobia has F-A-U-X in the middle of it to acknowledge the rash of lies being told about women getting their hijabs ripped off by deranged Trump supporters. Wrong. It's you. And now the entire narrative saying that Trump is owned by Putin, he's Putin's puppet, and we have proof, has blown up in their faces. There is a grand total of zero evidence of any collusion at all between Donald's team and Vlad's baddies. None. Zip. Zero. Nada. Nix. But there is increasing amounts of evidence that our state security apparatus was abused in ways that would make George Orwell weep. And it was the left doing it all along. You know, there's a famous saying from that noted philosopher Omar on the HBO show The Wire. He said, "Come at the king, you best not miss." Now, I know there are other sources for that quote, but Omar is spot on in this case. They came for the contender when Trump was the candidate. They came for Trump the victor during his transition. And they continue to come for the king once he took the oath of office. And they damn sure missed. And that's going to leave a mark. A big old nasty scar across the credibility and legacy of Barack Obama, the Democrat Party, and the media. They put party and politics above patriotism, and we just don't tolerate that. So stay tuned for the investigations, indictments, arrests, and hopefully convictions of some of these people who have abused our trust. This is Jim Hansen. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio. After the break, we're going to talk with Fred Flights, who spent considerable time at the CIA, who's going to fill us in on some of the specifics of what actually has been going on. We'll also talk with Bill Gertz from the Free Beacon and Washington Times with some chilling news about our vulnerability to cyber attacks on our infrastructure, our electric grid, and everything else. And we'll finish up with Luis Fleischman pointing out that the bad guys in Venezuela could use a little bit more than condemnation, maybe some sanctions, and a push out the door. We'll be right back after the break with more Secure Freedom Radio.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Jim Hansen, and we're talking now with Fred Fleitz, Senior Vice President for Policy and Programs at the Center for Security Policy, and a former CIA analyst. And Fred, that seems to be relevant to some things that are going on right now, specifically WikiLeaks publishing, if not all, at least a large chunk of the CIA's repertoire for spying on everybody. And I got to be honest, I want our spies to have the coolest toys. I want them to have all the best stuff, but I don't want the world to know about it. And I think this is a big problem.
Jim, it's good to be here. And I'm so glad to hear you frame this question in this way, because frankly, there are some people on TV, even on our favorite network, Fox News, who are saying some really irresponsible things, such as Judge Napolitano, who has said that these leaks prove to him that his microwave oven might be spying on him.
I think he's had his head in his microwave oven a few too many times.
Let's stipulate is that you're right. We want our intelligence agencies to have inventive and robust tools to spy on bad guys, and they've always had this. These are the tools we need in the 21st century. The fact that they exist don't mean they're being used against Americans. And I'll tell you something, as someone who worked in the intelligence community for 25 years, CIA and NSA follow the law. They do not use tools like this against Americans unless it's a court order in extremely exceptional circumstances, because they don't want to go to jail. It's a big deal. If someone was to use the technology to spy on somebody through their TV, or someone at the CIA decided to do that without authorization, that's a serious violation of the law, and it isn't easy to do. And I sort of wish that folks in the media would stop the fear-mongering and realize that what's really at stake here is that crucial tools to keep us safe have been compromised by morons working for our intelligence community. And I think that really has to be investigated.
Well, and there you kind of have the whole gist of the problem. Okay, we have the tools. They should not be used improperly. And almost certainly rarely, if ever, are. But when they are, or even worse in this case, when the results of wiretaps and surveillance and anything else that's done properly against foreign entities is used for political purposes, which happened in a far too extensive way during the last presidential campaign, then we need to find the people who are taking the products that these amazing tools are collecting and using them improperly. And like you said, let's put some of them in jail.
That's right. And, you know, I shouldn't call them morons. They're traitors. They're cowards and they're traitors. But there's some questions here we have to talk about. Why did this happen? First of all, why did CIA have an office to do this? This is what NSA is supposed to be doing. There's at least four offices in different intelligence agencies that do the same thing. And from my time in government, I know that when there's a hot topic, multiple agencies set up a project to cash in on funding from Congress because they all want to get in on the game. I don't know why this was set up. I also note that CIA Director John Brennan changed the rules on how to hire to make CIA more diverse. Rather than hire the most qualified, security standards were lowered. And I'm worried that the leak of this information may be because Brennan lowered the standards to hiring CIA personnel.
And I think the lowered standards and a general trend in a lot of the government services towards people who place their politics at least as high as they place their mission focus has led us to a situation where they believe that the tools of the state can be used for partisan purposes. And that's so wrong that I think some examples need to be made. And let's actually find the people who are doing this. And let's get them out of those positions and make the others who might consider doing that think twice about playing those kind of games.
And, you know, there's been some comparison between these FISA court requests to monitor the electronic communications of Trump campaign officials and probably Trump during the campaign. My view on that is that the Obama administration did this thinking that Clinton couldn't lose. Now that she lost, there's a paper trail. And I think there's going to be accountability. I think we're going to find out what was in these FISA warrant requests. I think it's going to be big.
I sincerely doubt we're going to, you know, see Barack Obama's signature on any of the requests. But they came from his administration, and I defy anyone to tell me with a straight face that they were going to wiretap someone associated with candidate Donald Trump without his knowledge. I mean, that's absurd. So, you know, at some point, you can delegate authority to do something like that, but you cannot delegate the responsibility for it happening. And all those people worked for President Obama.
I think Obama greenlighted a program to use the power of our intelligence agencies to undermine Trump before and after the election. And it included using intelligence collection methods, and it included collection that appeared to be collecting data on Russia, but really it was intended to collect data on Trump officials.
Fred, you're making a great point there. One of the things that came out in the course of all of this was the fact that they wanted to spy on Paul Manafort, who is a Trump associate. And let's be honest, he's a somewhat sketchy guy. And he does business in Russia and Ukraine, and he's got consultant ties all over. But they didn't have what they needed to get a warrant to spy on him. So they went to the NSA and asked for transcripts of conversations with Ukrainians that they knew he had talked to get around the entire concept of needing a warrant to spy on U.S. citizens. They went way over the line.
That's right. That's something that we've been raising with a number of experts around town, including Andy McCarthy. When the FISA court said no, the administration asked NSA to cull through intercepts between Manafort and Ukrainians. This is in the New York Times, February 14, 2017. I'm sorry, but the court said you can't do that. This is an American citizen. This is going around the law that protects American citizens from foreign intelligence agencies being used in the United States to spy on them. This was wrong.
And again, I think you also pointed out a very important fact. They never expected anybody to be shining a light on this. They expected President Hillary Clinton to be quite thankful for their diligent work in helping her get past Trump and the American people. Well, now she's making deranged videos from her bathroom, and President Trump now owns all the agencies where these malfeasance occurred, and he's got the ability to sic the people on him, and there's no place to hide.
I think that's exactly right. As I said, there is, I mean, everybody's throwing their hands up. This can't be investigated. Yes, it can. There's a paper trail. There's a lot of things the Justice Department and intelligence agencies did. These intelligence agencies don't act without authorization. There's paper trails for this. We're going to find it.
In the beginning of this, we were talking about how the exposure of the CIA's hacking methods hurt us. But there is a legitimate fear in all of this conversation that some of these actions taken, you know, in this case against the Trump campaign, may or may not have been using those particular tools. But do we really need to step up oversight over the intelligence agencies as part of the reforms necessary there to make sure that these people don't get froggy and decide to do the wrong thing?
I don't think that the discovery of these intelligence tools have anything to do with the Trump campaign. Clearly, there was an abuse of FISA warrants, and there was a disclosure of a transcript of an NSA intercept concert between General Flynn and Ambassador Kislyak, Russian Ambassador Kislyak. That's really the major violation. And what I think happened there, this transcript was requested by very senior Obama officials, which they're entitled to with their very senior. They proceeded to leak it to the news media. I like to think that that was an isolated incident, that that's not going to be repeated. It's very difficult to get a transcript of an NSA conversation. I've never seen one in my time in the intelligence community. But and I will tell you that from my time on the House Intelligence Committee staff, there really is strong oversight of our intelligence agencies. But given what happened with these FISA warrants, I think they're going to have to step up their game.
Well, let's hope they do, and good luck to the investigators trying to find these treasonous people and these traitors and those who think that politics trumps patriotism. Fred Flights, thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be here.
Up next, we'll be talking with Bill Gertz. This is Jim Hansen, and you are listening to Secure Freedom Radio.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. We're going to talk right now with Bill Gertz, who is senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon, Inside the Ring columnist at the Washington Times, and author of IWAR, War and Peace in the Information Age. I can get that on Amazon, correct, Bill?
Yes.
Well, do then, because that's going to be some good stuff. Bill, I wanted to talk to you. You've got a piece that came out with what seems to me to be the graveyard all of us are whistling past, the potential for cyber attacks on us from either the Chinese or Russians. Tell us about the report and what that portends for our security.
Yeah, this was a piece in the Washington Free Beacon this morning based on a recently released Defense Science Board study on cyber deterrence. And it had some alarming facts in it. The major one, which is that for at least the next 10 years, our critical infrastructure, the most critical of which is our electrical grid, will be vulnerable to a catastrophic cyber attack from Russia or China for the next 10 years. In other words, we're way behind the curve in hardening and strengthening our defenses against advanced cyber attack from states like Russia and China. I was really surprised. And the other element of this report, it was a 44-page report. The Defense Science Board is a support element of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition. It shows that we really aren't prepared for this in terms of defense strategy. In other words, if we are attacked in our infrastructure, the military likely also would be attacked in cyber ways that would limit its ability to operate. Basically, cyber attacks against our military infrastructure would prevent the military from taking the needed steps to help protect the country. So it really shows that our country is vulnerable and is going to be vulnerable for a quite long period of time. And that's truly alarming to me.
I would ask, did they seem to think that there was some outside limit at 10 years? Because I'm unaware of any legitimate abilities we have or programs we have that are going to guarantee this changes. I don't think we've placed, you know, the proper emphasis on this, the proper recognition of the threat you've just outlined, let alone countermeasures or prevention, mitigation, or making the grid itself resilient enough, you know, to recover from an attack like that. Do they have an idea that we're planning to fix this?
According to the report, steps are being taken to harden the grid and other infrastructures. That said, the threat is becoming more advanced faster than we're going to be able to do that. The context for this threat was that it was calling for a new element of cyber deterrence. And it said that the past cyber deterrence under the Obama administration was not effective. Basically, deterrence by defense, by saying, if you attack us, well, we'll just strengthen our defenses. And it called for a much more robust cyber deterrence, calling for holding foreign leaders accountable. In other words, it would be launching cyber attacks or perhaps even military attacks on foreign leaders if they are involved in cyber attacks on our critical infrastructure.
So, I mean, our best answer then is mutually assured cyber destruction at this point?
Well, at least for 10 years, I think that's what the report was saying. They urgently need to step up our game in the cyber warfare area. I agree. And that was a key point in my book, IWAR, that we are way behind the curve in developing these urgently needed capabilities.
Yeah, you can watch it in the consumer world, you know, that the hackers are always one step ahead and then they deploy countermeasures based on what the hackers have done. So, you know, unless you actually get to the point where you do two things. Number one, you have to deploy the resources and spend the time and energy to go ahead and get ahead of them. But then you also have to make certain that if any state wants to sponsor something like this, they know that the pain they're going to feel for doing it far outweighs the damage they could do to us. So let's hope they're listening. And again, go ahead and get Bill's book, I War, War and Peace in the Information Age. Definitely needed advice there. Bill, there's a couple other interesting things going on. And I say interesting in the scaring me and making all of us a little nervous. There's another piece you wrote talking about how the opposition leader in Russia thinks Trump could help them drive Putin from power. Is he playing internal politics there, or does he have some idea that this might be in Trump's or our best interest?
Yeah, this was another important story that ran in both the Free Beacon and the Washington Times, and it was an exclusive interview that I did with a Russian opposition figure. His name is Mikhail Khodorkovsky, and he is a former oligarch leader of the Yukos oil thing who was imprisoned for 10 years by Putin and has now become one of the leading democracy advocates in Russia. He has a movement called Open Russia. And his theory is that Trump has a unique opportunity to help convince Putin that it's in his best interest that he'll never get a better deal from another American administration in leaving power at this time and helping Russia get back on the path of democracy. He's a serious guy. I think he's not somebody who's pie in the sky, but I think it's an important thing that should be looked at. He was hoping to meet with President Trump and or at least some of his White House advisors, but a lot of the people involved in Russia affairs are not in place yet. But I was pretty impressed by him, and I think he make a good case that we definitely need a program to get rid of Putin. Again, this was one of the recommendations in my book, I War, that we launch a information warfare campaign that would drive Putin from power and put the country back on a path to democracy.
Okay, now that's a pretty interesting idea. I'm always a fan of trying to push things towards a better resolution, even if it's slightly dangerous in the short term. But would this involve trying to convince Putin there's a buyout of some sort, or what's the reason, other than being forced from power by internal Russian pressure, what's the reason for Putin to walk away from any of this? I mean, he's prone to cheating the system.
He made the point that Putin has been in power for 18 years. And that Russia is on the verge of collapse, despite what we may have heard in the press, certainly in the Russian media. The country is facing a crisis, and it's a lot weaker than it looks because they've been using propaganda means. And he believes that Trump is the first president in 20 years and probably will be the last for the next 20 years who is ready to question the international order set up at Yalta at the end of World War II. And for that reason, he thinks that Trump is a good negotiator and can negotiate with Putin that, hey, Vladimir, it's time to step down. And, of course, I mentioned to him, I said, well, what about exposing Putin's hidden wealth? And he said, really, what difference does it make whether we uncover the fact that he has $45 billion that he's stolen from Russian industry or whether it's $20 billion? He said one way that we could leverage him would be to give him access to that money and essentially buy him out.
Well, that's an interesting idea, and that would be big game politics. I mean, Trump has questioned NATO. He's questioned the relationships with China and everything else. He's not afraid to upset the apple cart, so that would be interesting to see. Bill, more of your good work. Talking about the Chinese and their issues with the United States deploying missile defense systems to South Korea after, you know, the North Koreans have amped up their lobbing of missiles towards Japan. It always shocks me when people are complaining that we deployed a missile defense system, as if that somehow is an aggressive act. What's their actual beef?
Yeah, this is a story that I've followed for the last 3 years. It was 3 years ago that the commander of U.S. Forces Korea, at the time General Scaparotti, urgently requested the deployment of this highly effective Army ground-based missile defense system called THAAD. And he wanted it because of the growing missile threat from North Korea. Well, that launched the Chinese into a major propaganda and influence operation, kind of international bullying against the South Koreans with all kinds of threats and offers of lucrative trade to not deploy the missile system, the missile defense system, because the Chinese feel that it's going to impact their large offensive missile forces. So finally, after all of these North Korean tests, the South Koreans finally submitted to it, and now we've got the first deployment of this new system. The Chinese reaction, they've threatened an arms race. I think, hey, let's use missile defenses all around China. Let's deploy some in Taiwan. Let's deploy some in Thailand. Let's deploy some in India or Mongolia. And if the Chinese don't like it, too bad. These are defensive systems against their missiles.
Well, like I said, I never have understood the idea that deploying defensive systems is an aggressive act. But in the end, I think saber-rattling is a game that everybody plays. Bill Gertz, senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon, Inside the Ring columnist, the Washington Times. Thank you so much for joining us. Up next, we will be talking with Luis Fleischman. This is Jim Hansen, and you're listening to Secure Freedom Radio.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. We're going to talk right now with Luis Fleischman, who is an advisor to the Mengus Hemispheric Security Project, as well as author of Latin America in the Post-Chavez Era, The Threat to U.S. Security. Now, Luis, you obviously have as much information and knowledge on what's going on in Venezuela as just about anybody we ever talk to. And right now, there is a little bit of condemnation going on of the Maduro regime. But I think we need more, and I think you think we need to do more to go ahead and bring about regime change in Venezuela. What do you think the United States should be doing to make this better?
Well, you're absolutely right. I think the Senate and now the House is considering a similar resolution. You know, they are condemning rightly everything that goes wrong in Venezuela. Even the State Department and Human Rights Watch actually issued a report basically talking about all the crimes of the Venezuelan government, which includes extrajudicial killing. Certainly, it includes association with transnational crime. It certainly includes also association with Hezbollah and with Iran, with a vice president that basically is openly pro-terrorist. And we don't know if the Venezuelan government also provided visas to people associated with ISIS, because they remember these passports were being sold in Baghdad. So the time has come for the United States to use its leverage, particularly the fact that we are the largest customer of Venezuela's oil sales. We have a leverage, and I think we need to do it as a matter not only of moral principle, namely human vis-a-vis human rights, but also in the, you know, for our own interest. Venezuela at this point is not only a huge human rights violator, but it is also a threat to our security for the kind of associations it has, for being not just a country that is corrupted with drug trafficking activities, but it is a country whose policy is to promote drug trafficking. Everyone is involved, from political and military leaders.
Now, I think you're absolutely right. You know, condemnation, that's great. Okay, let's go ahead. Let's say you are bad people. But in the end, that means nothing to a tyrannical government. So sanctions and other things are really the only way. Now, is that something that if the U.S. gets the ball rolling, the OAS and other folks are going to potentially get on board with? You know, is there enough anger at the Maduro government to make this a multilateral, you know, hemispheric project?
Oh, absolutely. In my opinion, yes. I think the countries of Latin America are a little timid. But the Secretary General of the Organization of American States, Luis Almagro, is basically asking for general elections to remove the Maduro regime, because he believes that the Venezuelan situation, the human situation, cannot be resolved with Maduro in power. You know, a similar situation like the one in Syria with Assad. So, interestingly enough, I don't believe that Secretary Almagro would act without the tacit consent of key Latin American countries such as Argentina and Brazil. And remember, Argentina and Brazil now have new governments. The president of Argentina has been very critical of the Maduro government, and so some elements in the Brazilian government as well. So I believe at this point that Almagro and the Organization of American States is likely to support an American action that includes sanctions to bring down the regime of Nicolas Maduro. I believe that the conditions are proper now. It's a different Latin America, and most importantly, it's a different president of the United States. Trump has the right approach.
Yeah, well, he is definitely a different president of the United States, and he's an action guy. He likes to make things happen. He doesn't talk about them. He doesn't just speechify. He takes action. So I think this is a wonderful idea. I hope we can push beyond, you know, simple resolutions and pieces of paper and put some teeth into this. So let's hope that that actually becomes an action item as opposed to just a discussion.
Absolutely. And in my opinion, I don't think we should wait, and I don't think the president should wait. We know that he's facing a number of challenges at this point, but, you know, I believe that no matter what is happening now, good policy is always good to have. It's always good to have, no matter how busy the administration gets now.
That's a fact. Luis Fleischman, I wanted to talk to you about another thing. The lack of U.S. influence and interest in Latin America has led some of the other semi-superpowers to fill the void. And both the Chinese and Russians have been very active in the hemisphere. What's going on with those guys? Are we going to end up in a situation where that's another place Trump can start to stem the tide and turn things around and potentially regain the proper influence of the United States in our own backyard?
Absolutely. And in my opinion, he doesn't have to resort to a direct confrontation with the Chinese or with the Russians. But I believe that by nature, the Latin American peoples can be closer to the United States because, you know, eventually, you know, the Latin American countries and the United States have the same historical background. You know, Latin American independence was inspired in the American independence. So these are, by nature, Latin American belongs to the West. West, unfortunately, didn't evolve in the same way that the United States did. I do not see any affinity between Latin Americans and the Chinese or the Russians in terms of the general features, the values, the norms, etc. But I believe that if President Trump takes action to bring down the Maduro government or in support of human rights, in support of a humanitarian policy in Latin America, I believe he's going to gain the hearts and minds of the majority of the people in Latin America, and certainly of the majority of the elected officials in Latin America. So I believe that this kind of involvement, you know, increasing trade, whether it is in the form of regional trade or bilateral trade, and having a good human rights policy, and try to bring back Latin America to the sphere of influence of the United States, I think naturally Latin America will move in the direction of the United States and will reduce the power of China and Russia today. China has tremendous economic influence today in Latin America, and Russia actually is selling huge amounts of weapons to Venezuela, Cuba, and other places. So Russia doesn't have the same economic leverage, but certainly the way they actually establish alliances with all the rogue states that are antagonistic to the United States is pretty worrisome. And I think the Trump administration must take this into account without necessarily confronting directly Russia or China.
Now, we talked just previously about the potential for, you know, moving Venezuela's government towards regime change. Is that something, if we're doing that and the Russians are busy selling weapons and you know, in some ways trying to make them a client state, that could get a little sketchy. But in the end, I think it would probably come to our advantage because we don't want a tyrannical drug regime armed by the Russians in our backyard, right?
Absolutely. And you know what, Jim? Most importantly, the people of Venezuela don't want that. The people of Latin America don't want that. And this is our greatest advantage.
Well, let's hope they're paying attention to that.
I hope so, too. But we also need an administration that can think about these things strategically with a calm mind and very focused, you know. So this is what we need to, you know.
Yeah, that's it's one thing to talk about it. It's another to make it work properly.
Oh, there is no question about it.
Well, thank you very much, Luis Fleischman, who is advisor for the Mengist Hemispheric Security Project, as well as author of Latin America in the Post-Chavez Era, The Threat to U.S. Security, and someone advising us quite wisely to pay more attention and remake the friends we already have in the region and make it better for all of us. So thank you very much, Luis.
Thank you, Jim. Always a pleasure to be here with you.
That's going to wrap up Secure Freedom Radio for today. We'll be back Monday with more information for you in the war for the free world.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.